Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as 1798part2.org as well as republicreview.org. You are listening to the only show that provides you the information necessary and what it will take to get the federal government back into compliance to the Constitution. We have to start there before we worry about the states complying to the Constitution, because the real culprit in all the noncompliance has come from the federal government. Now, the number to call in today would be 215-867-8255, but because I have a heavy monologue and I have content to get through, I would ask that you wait till tomorrow, or actually the next airing day, so that you can call in. If you've got any feedback regarding the content or anything like that, you're more than welcome to call in. This is kind of like a town hall regarding the Constitution. And even more importantly, this is the forum for state legislators to be able to call in and talk about what their progresses are, their challenges, and so forth in getting their fellow legislators and their fellow states on board with calling for the audit and calling for compliance by the federal government. So let me move forward. And as I always say, I have a need for help. And it's the obligatory groveling that I always do. If you are obliged in getting involved in saving our Constitution, if it's something that seems worthy of your time, send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you have a computer, if you have a phone, and you can email me, then you can be a pretty powerful weapon in what I would like to say, or as a constitutional warrior, in getting things started for your state, your county, whatever level you're ready to roll at, because we can get you pointed and started and firing on all cylinders. With that, I want to thank you, and I am truly humbled by the growth that this show has had, and I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank you for letting other people know, and continue to do so, because as this message gets out and as more and more people become aware of the fact that we can actually save this Constitution, it's not too late. So, thank you. And I hope that I am worthy of your time as I continue to try to provide you content that I believe is relevant. Forgive me for not being an entertainer. I didn't grow up trying to aspire to entertain. I do love teaching. I love helping people come to understandings and understanding whether they be complex things or simple things. I like to think I'm the simple-minded thinker, but I've been told otherwise. But anyway, thank you again for tuning in. I know you have a lot of other things you can do with your time, and hopefully you're being productive with the time when you listen to me. You can always download our podcast. They are at reclaimingtherepublic.org. With that, as I always do, there is no sign in the news today that the federal government is disbanding any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. And so that means you and I are responsible for carrying the weight. They're taxing us. They're going to tax us into oblivion. So if we don't, they will bury us with debt and taxes. So it's about time we just start picking up the shovel and the wheelbarrow and start scooping up and digging out, because that is what it's going to take. And it doesn't take, you know, I know I'm giving this metaphor of, you know, a lot of labor and effort. It really doesn't take that much. If you've watched my video, go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, and on the Take Action page, you will find the video that will give you the information you need on my domain page, the main page of reclaimingtherepublic.org. You will find all the content necessary to kind of give you the argument and explain to you the process, the model, and everything else. And I will give you a little bit more information a little bit later on today in this show as to what we are doing next. But before I do, I would like to kind of move forward because I know I've been telling you this is the big Thanksgiving program. And I know I'm doing this a little early because if I did this on Thanksgiving Day, then it'd be too late for you to make or intervene in your process and what you are doing. So if you are planning on doing the old pilgrim celebration where we feast and, you know, are thankful, I want you to consider at least looking at what you're doing from a different vein. As we reach this point in the season to come together as families and communities to give thanks, I believe now is the time to share the historical perspective. I believe it is imperative to start with the original Thanksgiving, though, and that happens to be the pilgrim Thanksgiving that we're commemorating today. And in 1621, when the pilgrims came to the New World with very old and failed ideologies, they wanted to try something new. And this ideology was in a stark contrast to the profit-driven capitalist. And the profit-driven capitalist really didn't exist in England yet. Profit-driven capitalists were really never unleashed by any of the systems, because you have to understand that England was a mercantile system. All of the monarchies were mercantile systems. They never allowed a nation to flourish under the true capitalistic concepts of a free market. What is a free market? A free market means a government is not intervening. So today, in our life today, we now have a free market. It's called the black market. Back then, it was a mercantile system where the crown literally controlled who did what and gave favors to whomever to allow them to become more successful or less successful. And so I just want to keep this in perspective, because it wasn't until America and the Constitution was framed and founded where we started instituting true free capital principles or free economic principles, is where we literally was able to unleash everybody's potential, and it actually put to shame the concepts of socialism and even the mercantile capitalism. So anyway, as they landed and set up their home in 1621, these pilgrims, in the season that was way too late, by the way, in that season, Governor William Bradford, I tell you, I'm bad with names, even if I'm reading it. And so Governor Bradford instituted their plan of socialism, and it was a plan that would literally be go down in the history and actually create a terminology called the tragedy of the commons, if you're familiar with that. But if we jump forward, only the 2 years that it took from them to land and being bailed out by the Indians and so forth, these pilgrims came to the realization that expecting everyone to pull their weight was pure folly. They didn't realize that there would be so many people that would game the system. So in 1623, Bradford actually abolished socialism, and he gave each household a parcel of land and told them that they could keep what they produced. In other words, he was actually doing something very similar to what the crown was doing. See, if you remember what the crown was doing, the crown was creating these colonies that were literally charters of companies, like profiteering type of companies. Virginia was a huge one, and Virginia was the first one, actually. And what they were doing was they were bringing people over as indentured servants. You would come over, you would work hard, and then you would be given land. There were some people that didn't come over as indentured servants. These people were just like, they paid their own way to come over. So they paid the fare of coming to America, and they were able to be adventurers and do whatever. And those people had money. And some of those people actually were insured or underwritten by the Bank of London, with an insurance policy in case something happened to them, because their family, you know, was dependent on them as a provider and so forth. But anyway, I digress. What ended up happening, though, like I said, is Bradford basically abolished and gave land to all of those survivors who had survived the 2 years of desolation that socialism had provided. And he replaced socialism with a similar free market system. You got to remember, though, that even though they came over and they founded Massachusetts, what they also did was they became a part of a colony of England. So he didn't really introduce or initiate a free market system. What he did was he actually initiated what I would say was a system that allowed people to start creating things, whether they be shoes or what have you. And as they got folded into the mercantile system, Britain started injecting in what they could do and what they couldn't do. Here was the beautiful thing about Massachusetts, though. Because it was so far north, it wasn't considered a really agriculturally rich state. I mean, yeah, you could grow things, but you couldn't do lots of agricultural production up there. You had long winters and hard winters. Down south in the Georgias, Carolinas, and Virginia, it was a little bit more suitable for growing tobacco and those types of things. And that's why the southern states were very rich and were well developed in contrast to some of the northern states. So anyway, what he ended up doing was he basically put an end to the famine of government. Now, many early groups of colonists set up socialist states. All ended with the same tragic results. Jamestown in 1607, less than half would survive their first 12 months in America. And most of them were being done over. And I'll get into this because I'm in a hard break. So when we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about Jamestown. And then we will go into America, or I should say our Constitutional Republic's true Thanksgiving. So we will be right back after this. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And let me remind you, I've got so much to go through. I just ask that you kind of hold off until the next airing so that we can actually take your calls. We can talk a lot about this, what's going on with the Constitution, and all of those things. So let me get back to this Jamestown 1607 and all of this. So in Jamestown, less than half, as I said, survived the very first 12 months in America. Less than half. And so that was kind of like the first wave, because if you remember the Roanoke group that showed up, all of them died. So there was 150% chance of death, practically, because the whole first group all died, and the second group that came over to America, less than half survived. So it didn't look good. That's why people were literally coming across the ships being underwritten and having some kind of protections for their families with Lloyd's of London, because they were insuring people at that time for these things. And so if you understand why less than half were surviving, it was because most of the work was being done by only one-fifth of the men that came. The other four-fifths choosing to be leeches. In other words, well, you can't make us, because you got to remember, everybody's free to do whatever they want to do, right? In that liberty type of society. Yeah, okay. Well, in reality, we cannot allow leeches to exist. Everybody that can has to provide for themselves. I would suggest you go back and read Isaiah. I forget what chapter it is, but I know Isaiah talks about the time when Christ comes and reigns and what it would be like, because everybody works. There is no such thing as welfare when Christ comes, because everybody will be wanting to contribute and so forth. But anyway, I digress again. So forgive me. Let me get back on track. The fact of the matter is, there have been a couple of other instances where we tried socialism. It wasn't just dead with Jamestown and the Pilgrims. Lots of utopian altruistic attempts in trying to create socialism. The problem has been that up to this time, there had been no really good empirical studies, data, or anything else. It was very rarely captured and very rarely published, because the advent of the publishing, the printing press, you know, wasn't that much further in their history. I mean, they just basically discovered the ability to start making books. And so it took a long time to start creating content so that people could start learning, and actually learning better, because everything else was kind of being done by hand of mouth and or sharing. And that's why I tell people, one of the reasons why the framers were all in sync and thinking the same is because they were all equally informed. They all read the same books. There was only so many books to go around. They didn't have the internet, if you didn't know, and they couldn't learn how to do things on YouTube. They actually had to pass that on from father to son, mother to daughter. Anyway, only when we're all held to the same standards is when we will find that people will produce for themselves. And that is when we are truly tapping the potential of an individual or a family, when everybody is contributing. Nothing destroys individual worth faster than handouts, entitlement, or communal living. Even the hippies had to learn this, and they had to come up with standards, and even those in the French communes had to learn this. And all of a sudden, when you went into communal living, where you thought you were going to be free from the government, you all of a sudden created a small government, and that government was just as tyrannical as the other government. And it was those people who were in charge that had the power to influence them, or give themselves benefits, where they would basically put or oppress those who weren't. So let me now jump. Now we've gotten a nice little pile of failed socialism throughout the colonies, and now they're back on track, kind of working with England in the mercantile system. So we're jumping forward to 1789. And this is when the Constitution was finally framed. And this is after the American Revolution. Most everybody understands that we had enough of the tyranny. Most everybody understands taxation without representation is tyranny. Most everybody understands the history that drove us to the Constitution, that the Articles of Confederation were failed because they did not give the federal government enough teeth to take what they needed to do the job that they were given to do, which was to keep us safe, to engage in wars, to have foreign relations, controlling imports, and those few small enumerated things within the Constitution. And so this was literally a miracle. And it was divine providence, with the fact that the good Lord had this done in a contract. So as the contract went forward and it was ratified, and I've read lots of ratification debates on this show, and I will continue to do so and reread them because we can learn from these things. They tell us exactly how that constitution is defined, and they're legally binding. So I'm going to jump into the fact that the new federal government in 1789 was formed. Congress started meeting, I believe it was May of 1789, and Madison got started on the Bill of Rights. They started moving forward, and before you know it, before the summer was over, they were ready to pass the Bill of Rights, and they were arguing it through the whole bodies, getting it through both houses of the Senate. And by December 15th, I think the Bill of Rights were done. I believe that very first session, the federal government or those public servants that were working there truly felt the spirit of liberty and individual liberty, individual sovereignty, and how to govern the people while still allowing them all of their liberties and sovereignty. And so in the process, a unanimous call, and when I say a unanimous call, even Madison was on board with calling for a proclamation of National Thanksgiving. Now, they had been doing Thanksgivings before, and in some areas, regional areas, like up in Massachusetts, they had their typical turkey pilgrimage Thanksgiving. But what they wanted to do was they wanted to break and create a whole new tradition. And so they asked George Washington, and again, I'm going to emphasize this. This was a unanimous call from both houses that George Washington called. This is like one of the only few times in our history where there was a unanimous call to do something and that the president even agreed. And so they asked for George Washington to make a proclamation of a national Thanksgiving. And so they provided him some writings. Each house kind of had their little proclamations. And then George Washington kind of took them together with his own thoughts and amalgamated a message to the American people. And so this is exactly what Washington wrote and basically sent out. And I don't have enough time to go through all of this in this one segment. So I'll try to keep an eye on the time so I can stop at a good point, and then I will twiddle my thumbs. No, I won't. I'll be able to abide some time with you. But anyway, it goes as this. This is what Washington says. He says, "Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor, and whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested to me," and I already told you those joint committees were, throughout the houses, they were unanimous in calling for this, "to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness." So here's Washington and Congress. They basically all agreed that they needed to do this. So here's Washington proclaiming to set aside a day for public thanksgiving and prayer. Now, most people go, well, that's not, you know, much different than the Thanksgiving we really celebrate. I mean, we're all, you know, publicly giving thanks and kind of praying. I mean, today with the godless secular government that we have, you can't pray. If it is, it's a ceremonial type of prayer. It is not a real fervent prayer of, you know, giving thanks to God and acknowledging His almighty favors and so forth that He has done for us and giving us this nation and our safety and happiness and so forth. And so, and you can tell I've just got a minute left, so I'm going to bide my time because the next paragraph is kind of meaty and I want to stop and talk about the next paragraph as we go through it. The point in fact is that what they are laying out is an acknowledgement that this nation was created and formed by the divine hand of providence, and that we are to remember that in Thanksgiving. It has nothing to do with the fact that we almost died and that the Indians saved us. What he is saying here is that we were created and this nation was forged and founded upon the divine hand of providence. And so what I'm going to read next is that this giving of public thanks, this thanksgiving, is not about eating bountifully. It's not about having a good spread and good eats unloosening the belt and kind of kicking back and taking a nap after you've pigged out. That is not what Thanksgiving is supposed to be about. And what Washington and Congress basically forged in this very first Thanksgiving is, I believe, the true spirit of our Constitutional Republic. And so as it has shown up, as I knew it was, we're going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, I am going to finish reading this proclamation because it is that important. And I hope it impresses upon you and motivates you to start considering Thanksgiving in a different light. And with that, we will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
But because of the content I have today, I would just ask that you call back on our next broadcasting day. So please hold on. I know your fingers are probably itching. So let me get back into what Washington was saying. And I think this is really, really important because he's asking the nation to do something else instead of gorging at a supper table. And he says, "Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November, next to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favor, able interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union and plenty, which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have acquired and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us. Now, I want to kind of go through this. He's obviously stating that this day, Thanksgiving, is to be set aside as a day of service. No, it's not a day of going to the football games or going out and playing football and hurting yourself and then coming back and eating while you watch football. No. What we're supposed to do is we're supposed to be serving him, and in doing that, we already know as Christians that we should be serving each other, going out and serving those who need help, going to the retirement communities, going to the hospital, going and blessing the infirm, taking care of and feeding people that can't feed themselves and so forth. It is a day of compassion. Our bowels should be filled with compassion in serving him. Period. And so maybe instead of having a big gorging meal, maybe if we took some of that money and actually went out and took care of and helped the widows, helped those people who need help, the homeless veterans. Now, I'm not saying that we, you know, don't help those people who are obviously living on the streets, who could actually have a job and be self-sufficient. But let's make sure we at least help those who can't help themselves first. Yeah, we have to start setting priorities, because as Milton Friedman and every economist will tell you, anybody that's an able-bodied person that can support themselves will support themselves when all of a sudden their support systems go away. And that's a fact. And so we know that widows, we know that people that are handicapped, we know that people are disabled, veterans and so forth, they're in a situation where they have no other control over their, you know, being self-sufficient and so forth. And we owe it to them. And as a matter of fact, as Christians, we owe it to him to be able to provide that thanks in what he has blessed us with and in serving those folks. And so if you get the true meaning of what this Thanksgiving is to do, it is something that should ripple and resonate throughout our daily lives, that every day we should be thankful and we should try to seek in serving. I'm sorry for this coming across as a religious message, but that's exactly what this is. When George Washington said, that for the civil and religious liberty, I want to be clear, there were points in time already and at this point in time as well, because Washington was completely aware of the fact that there were Jews in America that were not allowed to proselyte or openly practice. Muslims were not allowed to come here and even openly practice or live. It was the same thing with Hindu. This was a Christian nation or a republic, because every state in the republic was Christian. I want to amplify this by stating that when they created the general government, they used the word secular, because back in those days, secular is what we refer to as non-denominational today. Today, secular means godless. And that is incorrect in basically what they had set up, because they were not godless, and it was obvious that they were actually calling for and asking people to provide service to him. And so let me go on. The last paragraph, he has a line underneath this given under my hand, but this is the last paragraph. And he says, and also that we may unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide our sovereigns, that means the people and the states, and nations, especially such as have shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best. And then again, the last line is, given under my hand at the city of New York, because that's where Congress was meeting for the first couple of years. And it was the third day of October. It was basically 2 months away from their very first Thanksgiving. Now, so let me kind of get this out here. This is a very poignant message, and that's why there's a reason why you don't read this in school. This must be read. It should be read in school. And let me be clear, each of the presidents for decades after this called for national prayer, a regular national prayer and fasting and humility periods. Madison did this, and so did Abraham Lincoln. It is a tragedy that they do not teach this reverence. They do not teach this compliance to our Creator and having respect towards our Creator. And it is a shame that they have completely removed this from our school system. And so, most people do not even know just how much of our Christian Republic we were really Christian. That's why I want to give you three quick examples before I run out of time. Before Thomas Jefferson left for Europe and after he had served as Virginia, he was being tried for abandoning his post. It was a hearing. He was never tried, but there was a hearing, and a traveling judge came down to actually take testimony from all the parties who were pursuing this and in the defense. And in doing so, most people knew that Thomas Jefferson was not an active Christian in his community. And so when the judge sat down, he called all the officers up to the bench and he called Jefferson. He said, Mr. Jefferson, I know that you're not an active Christian in good standing with your church. Therefore, I will not allow you to bear testimony, nor will I allow you to, you know, make retort or counter testimony. However, because you are an officer of the court, I will allow you to cross-examine and bring forward people that are in good standings to testify on your behalf. And so that was a slap kind of in Jefferson's face because, you know, here he was being punished because he wasn't going to church. Well, that's because that was the standards they had. And I'm going to give you two more examples of this legal standard that they had. Alexis de Tocqueville in 1833, when he was traveling America, had made notice that several times, and he highlighted one, that an atheist case was thrown out of court in upstate New York. And he basically pointed out the fact that the judge clearly stated that because he was atheist, he could not give him credit for, you know, being answerable for lying or what have you. So the only way a person could pursue a claim in court against grievances of somebody else or anything like that and have your day in court was if you were a Christian in good standing in your community. I want you to think about that. That's how life was back then. Your interface and your protection was really dependent on your activity and your involvement in your church and community. Later on in Joseph Story's biography, he tells this, he basically kind of explains real quick, and I cite all three of these things, these three examples in my book. But Joseph Story tells us very clearly that the reason why they did not trust and allow infidels to bear testimony because of that exact same thing that the judge commented in New York, because atheists and people that did not believe in a higher power, did not believe that they were accountable for doing the wrong thing. And therefore, they had no credit with the court. They were unable to convince the court that they had nothing but good intentions, because obviously they were pursuing something in their own benefit and behalf and not seeking the truth. So with that, we will be back, and in this next segment, I am going to give you an insight of what we're doing right now in Wyoming, and I'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Well, with that, I hope that each of you may have some introspect and looking at how you engage in Thanksgiving, that each of you may want to consider doing something a little more, considering doing what Congress felt compelled to do and what they asked George Washington to state in a proclamation, that we all seek a day of thanksgiving and service to him instead of serving ourselves a nice banquet of food, as the pilgrims may have done because they were starving or what have you. Now, as we move forward, and as you know, I am traveling to Wyoming, and so that's one of the reasons why this is canned. But I'm traveling to Wyoming in the beginning, at the end of fall and the beginning of winter, to plant seeds. As I have mentioned, that as you understand, Republic Review has to come from the state legislators. And who has the greatest control over the state legislators? Well, we the people, right? Technically not. The party. Because as you understand, the parties by design are laissez-faire. That's why we've had John McCain's. That's why we've had Dwight Eisenhower's. And yes, Dwight Eisenhower was a bad president. He may have done some good things, but he's the president that gave us the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Instead of vetoing that bill, he signed it and basically straddled America and this republic with the greatest entitlement state that was designed to destroy this republic. So I don't think Dwight Eisenhower, in my book, ranks up as one of those really good presidents. Maybe Calvin Coolidge, and actually I do look at Calvin Coolidge in the last century, is probably one of the best presidents we've had. And that's because he understood the Constitution. And that's why instead of just inserting some department or creating some power like Reagan had done as well by creating government regulations and so forth with the Equal Employment Act, the EEO and so forth, Coolidge understood that the Constitution needed to be amended. And so in 1926, Coolidge went down the path of trying to seek an amendment to giving the federal government the ability to control labor. The states overwhelmingly rejected it, and that sent the message back that you can't regulate labor, federal government. Well, after they put the nation over a barrel and literally forced the nation to suffer with the manipulation that Hoover designed, and I told you about this before, that they continually suppressed the people to where the people did not have the will to fight them, and that's how they created the Social Security system, the Department of Labor, and so forth and so on, and literally started tearing up the Constitution. But the fact is that the parties, because they're laissez-faire, they allow these people with grand designs and machinations, with avarice, in seeking to serve themselves and or to serve people who they're beholding to, and not the true constituents, the we, the people, and the states. We have been sold downriver for well over 150 years. And that is because the party has allowed these people to come in, these candidates, to become public servants and not hold them accountable. That is why I've been haranguing on the fact that the party needs serious change. And in addition, the party needs to drive laws in supporting some of these changes as well. Focus is the first thing the party needs to change, because right now, it's even though they have platforms, platforms mean nothing. And the platforms that they have, maybe, I'm just going to use the term, they feel good and they look good. It's not that I don't like a lot of the party platforms, but their tone and the way they lay it out is missing the mark. This is business, folks, and if you're going to have a strategic plan, your strategic plan has to be hitting the mark 100%, right on, boom, pow, it's got to hit it. And so the focus for the party, at least for the Republican Party, and I'd like to see the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party adopt the exact same strategy, is ensuring compliance to the Constitution. And so they need to focus their platform on compliance to the Constitution. So when they talk about anything at the federal level, this is why I say they have to have two platforms, one for the federal party and one for the state party and below. The federal party should be focused on the U.S. Constitution and only those enumerated powers, and literally calling out everything else that the federal government is doing that is not enumerated, that is a violation of the Constitution. They got to call them all out as saying, look, you've only got these enumerated powers. Everything else you're doing is unconstitutional, and you must cease and desist and dismantle that Leviathan. I mean, it's that clear. Back to the state. The state, if it's within the state constitution for the state government to have their hands and knickers in healthcare, to have their hands and knickers in education and so forth, then that's what they can do. And that's all they do. And that's where the party has to focus in complying to the state constitution. They should call out the state government for any violations of the Constitution it is not adhering to. In other words, these constitutions are enumerated, and they have to have either an amendment to the Constitution. They can't just pass an act or a bill or a law like this I-1639 in Washington State is a violation to the U.S. Constitution as well as the state constitution, and therefore it is an unconstitutional law. They don't have the power to do that. The only way they can invoke those types of laws is by amending the state constitution and then amending the U.S. Constitution. So they have to have this focus in demanding compliance to the Constitution. There's that word again, folks. Say it with me. Compliance. You want your employer to comply to that contract. You want to comply to the contract so you don't have the consequences that come from non-compliance. Once the party has focus, then the next step is control. And that control literally has to come down this path of getting every candidate and every party member to signing pledges. If they sign pledges, now you have a legal document that says they are going to do something. And in that legal document, there are consequences that you also identify that literally leads to resignation. And so that if a person, you know, fails or egregiously violates the Constitution, they don't comply to the Constitution at the state level or at the federal level, then what the party has to do is they either have to admonish and, you know, publicly shame the candidate or the public servant. And if that doesn't do it, then they have to publicly rip the label off. In other words, letting everybody know that we are removing the Republican label. This person is no longer Republican. And then they have to seek for a lawsuit to taking that seat back. Because here's somebody that signed a pledge that said they were going to do something and they didn't. If you understand the party actually owns those seats, especially when the party nominates these folks, not only by the pledge, but they will nominate these folks just as to covering that seat. And they do that so that if that seat gets given up, the party is the one that has the power of replacing that person. And they go to the PCOs in voting and so forth, especially at the state level. So the party is a political process, and the lowest representative within our republic are your precinct committee officers. So they have to have control. They have to have a mechanism of force. And so that force is the, or I should say that control is the pledge, and that force is the teeth. So there's the third element to the serious changes that we need. You got focus, control, and now teeth, because this pledge will have teeth in it that will either force that person to resign. If they refuse to resign, then the state will go down the path of pursuing that seat from underneath that person and going down the path of demanding that the laws be written to allow the party to basically say, hey, because people vote by the party. It's a known fact that everybody just votes down, or most everybody votes down the ticket, and they just vote for Republicans. I can't tell you how many times I've been told by people, it's a point of bragging for them that, oh yeah, you know, I vote Republican every time. I've never not voted Republican. So I don't know what that means anymore then, because what you're voting for is just a person with a label on them, but it doesn't mean that they're going to be doing good things. The party owes it to the people as well as themselves to clean up their brand and take control of their brand. Because currently, that brand has a really sucky message. When you look at McCain and when you look at some of these other people that have kind of tarnished that brand, you have to guard your brand. And as a matter of fact, what I like to point out to people is, you know, one of the most common brands that people tattoo on their body? Harley Davidson. That is a huge brand that you can find. All sorts of people are putting that company's, a company name and logo on their body. Another one that is, you know, high up in desirability is Apple. The Apple brand is high. But let me ask you this. Have you ever seen anybody with a GOP elephant or a DNC donkey? It's... There's not a lot of people out there that are putting that brand on them as a tattoo. But I will say this, that the most popular brand out there, you can find probably more tattoos. And why is this important? Because people are embossing on their skin for the rest of their life a brand name. That means that it means that much to them. And the one brand name that more people have is We the People. Go look it up. You'll find that there are far more people with the We the People brand than anything else. And it is amazing that we're not focused on the Constitution. That's where we have to get. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic. I need your help, and I'll be back again. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.